The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It is the birthday of I Should Be Writing. We are celebrating it on season 18, episode 52.
I should be writing. I should be working on my craft.
Hi there, welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers, and I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. And today, August 9th, 2022, is I Should Be Writing's 17th birthday. Now, saying that out loud kind of dates me at this point. Yes, podcasting has been around that long. Hopefully you haven't read my Twitter thread on this, because I'm going to be repeating a little bit of it. But, back in the day, there weren't a lot of podcasts back then. Podcasting wasn't even a year old at the time. From what I knew, there was one other podcast that focused on writers, and that was Michael A. Stackpole's The Secrets. Mike had a newsletter that he had sent out with essays on writing, and he was just repurposing them for the podcast, which was brilliant. Only his was writing advice coming from a pro and sort of made assumptions, not bad assumptions, don't get me wrong, but just assumptions based on the level of professionalism he was talking to. He didn't talk about imposter syndrome. He didn't talk about rejectomancy. Did we call it that back then? I can't remember. But I had a friend who also wanted to be a writer, and I'm like, hey, let's try to get a writing group together. We got you and me, I bet we can find some more. And they said no, because they were afraid of people stealing their ideas. And that just hit me as very backward thinking, because that's like saying you don't want to go to work because you might get into a car accident. Do car accidents exist? Yes. Are they terrible sometimes? Yes. But does that stop most of us from going to work? No. It's an accepted risk we all take. Can someone steal your work? Sure. Does it happen often enough to make you not write in the first place? Or not submit in the first place? No, it doesn't. So that was one of the things. And, you know, people thinking that that rejections meant that they were either there was some sort of failure within them, like a core failure, or that they were just fine, but the deck was stacked against them and there was a conspiracy. I know someone like that too. I don't think she listened, because she's not writing now. I don't like her very much, but that's a different story. The fact that she quit because she thought that the deck was stacked against her kind of says a lot. I just did a left turn into slagging on somebody you guys don't even know who I'm talking about. That's classy. Anyway, so I thought I could take what I was learning by trying to build a fiction career and tell other people that this is the path that I'm taking. Here's what I'm experiencing. And it's probably normal. I say probably because I was still very new at the time. What the initial plan for I Should Be Writing was to do 3 episodes in a month. And then the 4th episode, I would do an interview with a pro to sort of bring in some credibility, because all I had done was a couple of 20,000 word assignments on RPGs. Which I guess I got experience from. And I got the power not to take edits personally, because if I had, then I would have quit. Because a lot of the edits were not professionally written at all. Here's another funny thing. It's embarrassing for me to say this, because it just is. Now it's laughable. But because I knew of one writing podcast, and I knew Mike because I'd gotten to know the guys through the Dragon Page, Michael and Evo and Summer and Joe Murphy. They knew Mike because he was also in Phoenix at the time, I believe. So I asked him if he thought it was okay that I did a writing podcast. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but at the time, it's like, right now, they're everywhere. They're everywhere from a million different points of view. But then there was one. So being the next one to stand up, you know, it could have looked like I was copying him. When clearly I wasn't, because I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew what my goal was. Because I knew a lot of people who were suffering from what beginning writers felt and not knowing that it was normal. And yeah, I talked about what I learned as I went along. As time went on, I started selling stories. I started getting agents and then started losing agents. It's probably about time for me to revisit that whole story. I try to tell it every once in a while because I know that not everybody in the audience has heard it. But now's not really the time. I have been, in short, I have been through many, many agents, especially for this point in my career. Very few, only one of them is somebody I would consider a terrible agent. Everybody else was just, they either quit the job itself or, and there were two amicable partings. So yeah, once I started selling professionally, it felt weird because the tagline for the show used to be, for a wannabe fiction writer, by a wannabe fiction writer, but the audience told me that they felt weird about me calling myself a wannabe, and I felt weird not calling myself, see, imposter syndrome, but I finally just said, it's for beginning fiction writers. But along the way, I was really gratified to hear that it was for other creatives too. A lot of other creative people listened, and then some people just enjoyed it, even though they weren't any sort of creative person at all. And very grateful for them too, because that makes me feel good in my feels. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what I've learned, because I've learned a lot, a whole lot, both in writing and podcasting. I've been racking my brain on what to do today, and I didn't have the spoons to go through and listen to really old episodes. I can't do that. I get embarrassed. I don't know why. It's an important chronicle of my path to where I am now, but it still feels embarrassing to listen to the older stuff. Just for me, I'll leave it up there for you guys. If you want to listen to the archives, you can support the Patreon at patreon.com/mightymur. But I don't want to listen to it. And I didn't really have it in me to secure a guest for this episode, and I didn't know who to invite. But then I thought, you know, I have learned a lot, a whole lot, about everything. So I wanted to go over that. So we'll do good news first. My good news is, for all the crap that's happened this summer, I'm still doing okay. And that's a good thing. My good news is also I finished Return to the Obra Dinn this weekend, and it blew my mind, and I'm still thinking about it, and This was a game that came out in 19. And I only just got to it. And it blew my mind. It's an investigative game for, it's by the person who did Papers, Please, where you play an insurance adjuster. But you play an insurance adjuster for the East India Tea Company. East India Company. I don't know if it's tea was involved. Anyway. And you go aboard a ship that's been missing for 5 years, and you have to figure out what happened to everybody on board, because the ship disappeared and everybody died. So you look around on board and find all the dead bodies, and you've got a magic stopwatch that allows you to see those people at the times of their death. So sometimes you'll just see one person very clearly murdering another one. And sometimes they'll say something to give you a clue of who they are. But as you look around, while you may see one person killing another or one person being killed by something else, you can look around a little further and see what other people are doing. You know, at one point, while one person's dying over here, you see someone chasing someone else with a knife over here, so you can connect those dots. Things like that. The audio design is fantastic, and the video is all still shots, and it's sepia tone, but it's still pretty gory. And it's in 3D, so you can walk around and see from different angles. It's pretty phenomenal. And just the way the whole thing's put together just kind of blew my mind. So I do recommend the game, and that's my good news, that I finished it. Dang it. Good news. Shauna signed the paperwork for their condo on Friday. Fantastic. Congratulations. I know you've been working on this for months. Shaunatopia, yay. And happy anniversary. Yours was my writing. I assume you mean first writing podcast? I'll go with either first or favorite. I'm allowed to have an ego today. I think you already counted my rejection before the podcast started. I try not to count the rejections before, when I'm not on the air for I Should Be Writing, because then I'll just get lost. I think we can at least hit the yay button for you. We'll count it. One's not going to mess up our numbering. So, congratulations, Daniel, on the rejection. It's not easy. It's not fun. And yet, we still celebrate it because you're a working writer. And since you don't have a sale to celebrate, we'll at least celebrate the work. Oh, first and favorite. Thank you, SP Gemini. That's very sweet. So what have I learned? The biggest thing that surprised me about doing a writing podcast was that I was accidentally networking, and I didn't know it. I was interviewing people. I would go to cons and I would interview people. And in doing so, I was meeting all these pro writers that I wouldn't have had the courage to say anything to. But now, since I was a podcaster, I could approach them and interview them. And that was, you know, after a couple of years, people started to know who I was, and that was like I'd been doing stealth networking, so stealthy I didn't even know it, which is probably good, because if I'd thought about it like networking, I would have bungled it. But all I was doing was just trying to interview people. So that's one big thing that this podcast did to launch my writing career. I think it was because I was getting known as a writing podcaster, if people understood what podcasts were at the time, that made Dongwon Song want to talk to me at a Worldcon when they were still working at Orbit. And they left Orbit, but I got passed to their boss, who was eventually bought my first book. I also met her at that same Worldcon, so it was, and I don't know if they would have known about me had I not been that writing podcaster. Fun fact, I Should Be Writing has almost an order of magnitude more bigger audience than Ditch Diggers. And it's never been nominated for a Hugo. Well, Ditch Diggers have been nominated a few times. Twice? I think we were nominated twice. So yeah, networking was one of the biggest things I learned. I learned that there's only really two pieces of writing advice that I consider ironclad and everyone must do. And they're both pretty connected. And that's, you have to write and you can't stop. So persistence is key. Everything else is negotiable, but if you quit, then you're done. If you fail to persist, then you're done. And the crappy writer who persists will always beat the good writer who gives up. And that's just a numbers game. And I know most writers don't like to think about numbers, but it's true. I need to have Tobias Bakel back on because he had a story in Writer's Digest or The Writer. I can't remember. I get those two mixed up all the time because I do subscribe to both. About how the CIA actually tried to infiltrate writers' groups to, and one of the things they did was try to demonize passive voice, which saying it out loud sounds ridiculous. But I mean, Toby got this article published in a legit magazine, so I haven't had a chance to read it all. Okay, I'll just say it. I have ADHD and haven't had the focus to sit down and read it. But I will be taking a look at that because I'd like to get Toby back when he's feeling better to talk about that because that's fascinating. I'm sorry, that was my little tangent thinking about passive voice being one of those rules you're not supposed to follow. You're not supposed to break. Yeah. Mistakes were made, exactly, Tree Lobsters. But I'm constantly thinking about quitting publishing, but not quitting writing. I would like to persist at the thing I actually like. Preemie? I'm sorry, I just went on a big brain tangent of the marginalized folks should trade the pseudonym Jake Reelman and just trade it around whenever we want to publish something and make it look like it was written by a white guy and publish it and make it really successful. Or, you know, we could just go back to writing online and enjoying it. Yep, Jake Reelman. Yeah, if anybody wants to use the name Jake Reelman, I'm cool with it. Or, you know, his brother John. Or Jack. Jack Reelman has to write the noir. I'm sorry, guys. I learned the value of kindness, and I know, again, that sounds touchy-feely, but if you are remembered for being kind, you will be remembered in a better light than someone who's not. I will say that because of various ingrained systemic sexism and racism and homophobia, some people are able to get away with being jackasses than other people are. But overall, it is still in your best interest to be kind. Which one does horror? Mac or Max? Yeah, Max, I think Max Reelman might do horror. Mac Reelman also does noir and mystery, but he fights with Jack, and they've only done one book together, and it was not a pleasant experience for them. And being kind feels good too. Yes, it does. It really does. Need to pull a Jake Reelman author photo from thispersondoesnotexist.com. Awesome! One thing I've learned as a reader is that stories that speak to people emotionally will often do better than stories that follow all the rules. If you look at the massive bestsellers, they're stories that got people thinking in a new way or feeling something they hadn't felt or giving them some sort of emotional gift that for one reason or another other books were unable to do. And it didn't matter how well they were written. It really stands out in the books by that Scottish woman how much she uses adverbs when you're listening to the audiobook. The adverbs are just everywhere. And that author also suffered from writer bloat and plot holes you could drive a truck through, but it didn't matter because people cared about it so much, they didn't care. They didn't care about the mistakes. What else have I learned? Some negative things I've learned is that if, you know, you can't stagnate your content creation. I've been doing this for so long, it's hard to look at it and find out what needs to change with the times. I changed to Twitch live streaming, which made me happy and made the podcast a lot more consistent. And I'm proud of that. But it didn't move the needle at all on either audience size or Patreon support. It's fine because I am getting a lot out of it. I am getting, well, the two things I just said. I am having so much more fun talking to you guys and interacting with a live audience than just talking into a mic. And I'm more consistent than I've ever been, ever, in 17 years. So I do love the switch to the live streaming, but I still feel like my content's stagnating, and I'm trying to figure out what to do about that. And there is that fear of being, I'm just old and haven't moved with the times. I hear about the problems podcasters have today just sound ridiculous to me. It's like, can't monetize, or no one will pay our huge crew. And I'm like, well, I make enough in Patreon so I can afford to pay Summer for production. But that's really it. And we manage okay. And granted, I'm not doing those big, fancy, like the podcasts that need research and deep dives and all that. I'm just talking about writing. But the fact that people think that to start a podcast you need a bag of money is just, I don't get it. And that maybe I'm being too unambitious. And I should know what's going on and what people are worried about. And but sometimes I look at all of the new companies out there offering services, and I'm just like, who needs that? And it does, it honestly does sometimes make me feel old and just not keeping up, because I have my show, I have its format, I know what I want to do. So I don't know how to grow. That's really it. And the funny thing is that I have a talk to give at She Podcast Live this fall. And I almost feel like I have to blow the dust off myself to get in front of a live audience and talk about podcasting in 2022. I was honored that they invited me, but I have kind of struggled with what to talk about that anybody podcasting these days will care about. I feel a lot more that I've moved on with, like I've kept up with writing, which is my love. If I had to drop, if I had to keep one thing that I do, I'm sorry, the podcast would be gone in an instant. You know, I wanted to be a writer my whole life. And you know, maybe I'll be remembered more for the podcasting, and that's okay. I won't care at the time because I'll be dead. But writing is still my love. It is what I want to do. So I have felt like I've kept up with that, and I have felt that that career has been growing, which is good. That's really good. Station Eternity comes out October 4th. Get your signed copy at flyleafbooks.com. I should just have pre-recorded ads where I say that, just like that, but I'll just hit a button instead of having to say it. I feel as big budget podcasters are a vocal minority, to be honest. Probably. I mean, big budget podcasters sort of expect huge audiences, and therefore their vocalness is guaranteed. I'm really impressed at how quickly you turn on the promotional announcer voice. Well, I have been doing podcasting for over 17 years because, remember, I was podcasting before I should be writing. You know, getting to know other writers has also been a big thing, a big bonus in all of this. And I remember when I was a kid and I heard about, like, the time of Hemingway and Fitzgerald and Stein and the friendships and or rivalries they had. And I thought, like, how did all these people find each other? And granted, we have the internet now, but now it's just like, oh, they go to the same places, they do the same things, and then they read each other's books and find out about each other. And because, you know, making friends with authors is one of the best things. You learn a lot and you get a lot of help. That sounds like the same thing. You just build community. And this is why, again, people that say that your other writers are your competition, they're really shooting themselves in the foot, because I don't think you'll get anywhere without other writers. Other writers are the kind of people that say, oh, thanks for inviting me to this project, I can't do it, but I know someone who you really should check out. Other writers are the people who will offer to moderate a panel at a con and suggest that you sit on the panel. We need other writers. And if they are those kinds of people that think you're the competition, there are plenty of other writers out there who will not treat you like that. My grandpa hung out with Hemingway and lived next door to William Saroyan. Okay, I can't pronounce it. I'm sorry. Saroyan. They'd all die before I was born, though. I'm sorry, Under Pope, but that's a really good story. Most writers are good people. A lot of the ones who aren't, unfortunately, sometimes they're loud and sometimes they're wealthy and loud. So that's not great, but most writers that I've encountered just want to help other people. The whole idea of pulling up the ladder after you is just terrible. Exactly. Other writers are the only ones who really understand when you complain about writing. And the good thing is, after doing 17 years of this stuff, I learned that almost every time you do it is someone's first time listening or viewing. And so if you feel like you're repeating yourself, there's probably somebody new out there who hasn't heard it or hasn't heard it from you. And honestly, that is the biggest thing that keeps me going, because I have had more than one moment where I'm just like, why am I still doing this? Surely I've said everything I can say. I'm not nearly as, you know, my growth is stagnated. Why am I still doing this? And part of it is because I do love to interact with you guys. But also, I know that not everybody's going to listen to 600 some old episodes to get all of my wisdom. Yeah, so, I've also found, I know a lot of people build their careers by being polished and professional and expert-y. That's a new adjective, expert-y. But for me, being honest and vulnerable about my shortcomings and my problems has done a lot and helped me build a group of an audience that knows I'm not trying to hide. I'm not trying to be all shiny and professional and make them feel like, what the hell's wrong with me? Or clearly I can never publish because I'm not nearly that well put together. I'm here to say you can be a mess and still manage to get stuff written and still manage to get stuff published. Dealing with my depression is what I did right before I started podcasting, so it's a data point of one, but it's also, I started taking the antidepressant, and about 7 or 8 weeks later, I did my first podcast, and the antidepressant takes about 6 weeks to work, so that's one of those, I'm going to say that correlation and causation are really tight. And then, you know, getting diagnosed with ADHD much later in my life, talking about that here too, also learning about how that has affected my writer's life has been illuminating and something I've wanted to share. Daniel says, the podcast has been very useful to me since I got back into writing a couple of years ago, both from the content of the show and from the community that's grown around it. Thank you. The openness about imperfections is one of the best qualities for me. Yeah. My level of honesty is still rare. Thank you, Veronica. I didn't realize it was rare, but I just feel disingenuous. I feel like I'm lying if I try to present myself as shiny, fancy expert. It just feels wrong. I co-wrote a book on podcasting early on. It's hysterical because Pearson still sends me the royalty statements, and I'm like, do you do this for every single out-of-date tech book you have? Because that's a lot of paper. And yeah, I signed up for paperless reports, and I still get the paper and the email. But the, I was taken to task by my editor because I was trying to explain to people, here are the mistakes I made, and here's what I learned from them, and therefore you should not do them. And she said that approach made me not look like an expert. And they didn't want that. They wanted an expert writing the book. And so I had to change my approach a little bit, and that felt wrong. But, I mean, and I almost feel like I need to go to people and apologize if they pick it up now, because y'all, that book is old. And anybody who tries to get podcasting tips from this super old book that still talks about John Edwards like he's a politician who didn't crash and burn in a flame of infidelity and your wife died of cancer and you didn't care kind of thing. And that stupidly big house. Sorry, I'm... Yeah, I worked with John Edwards before all that fell apart. when he was trying to be one of the, he was probably the first politician who did a podcast. And I remember meeting him and meeting Elizabeth Edwards and going, why the hell is she not the politician? Because she was so much smarter than him. So much. I would ask him questions and he'd be like, Elizabeth? And then she'd look at me and she'd answer the question and he'd go off being fancy, important man. I don't know. Preemie's going to put shiny, fancy expert on my business cards. It's not true, but no one can check. That's true, Preemie. I like it. Veronica says, a big part of my recovery from major depression is being authentic, and I now see how rare it is. I just want to let people know they're not alone. That's the biggest thing. The pain you feel when you're rejected, the pain you feel when you sit down and you look at the blank page and go, I got no idea. The pain you feel when you finish something and you want to feel accomplished and proud and you're just like, someone just took a big poop on the page and I am supposed to edit this and send it off to somebody? I'm on a mailing list with a couple of other writers. I definitely can't say who, but somebody I respect greatly just said, you know, I just finished something and here comes the crisis of being absolutely sure that it's crap coming 3, 2, 1. So, definitely not alone in thinking that. And the biggest secret here, I'll tell you, here it is. The biggest secret about building a writing career is knowing that that is going to come. And just being able to tell your brain that, here it comes. Let's brace, and then we'll move on. It's like a wave. If you're just playing in the ocean, and a wave comes up behind you and knocks you down, that sucks. But, you know, if the wave comes at you, and you're ready for it, you can ride it, or you can dive under it, or something. The metaphor's kind of falling apart, because that, I don't know where surfing comes in. But really, it's, these emotions are going to happen. When you, it's like almost textbook that when you hit the 35,000 word mark on your novel, you're going to be sure that it's absolute drivel. And you're going to want to quit. And all of that is normal, and the pro writer knows it and feels it and moves on. And the amateur or newbie or wannabe or whatever, the most positive beginning person word I can use here. I know people seem to be annoyed sometimes when you use non-pro words, but the people who understand that. And again, like I said in a previous episode, emotions aren't reality. You acknowledge it and move on. And that is what helps make persistence happen, because you don't let those emotions drown you. An expert is someone who fails successfully or keeps going after they fail, which I guess is also considered successful. Daniel says, this is one of the few writing podcasts I've listened to that talks about, honestly, about how common rejections are. I think too many others try to sell listeners some skewed perception of what to expect from a writing career. Or they try to tell you that if you listen to me, surely you will succeed. I can't promise that. I won't. If you listen to me, I hope you will persist. And if you persist, I'm pretty sure you're going to get better. And if you keep getting better, I'm pretty sure you're going to get published. That is all I can promise. I occasionally blog about how my bipolar 2 affects my writing, and it's very cathartic, even if I'm told sometimes that it torpedoes my writing career. Under Pope, do they say the honesty about your bipolar torpedoes your writing career, or the actual mental illness torpedoes it? Definitely don't poop on the page. Exactly, Daniel. There's some wisdom for you right there. Sometimes I puke words. I refer to my first draft as my barf draft, yes. Yeah, I don't like promising success. I can't. Because it's not true. I want to promise that things are going to hurt and that's okay. And we all feel it. And if you need support, there are others out there who will say, yeah, it sucks. Let's keep going. Let's stop the hike. Let's get some water. Let's put on a Band-Aid over that blister and keep going. What is success anyway? You know, Preemie, I'm far too sober to talk about that. If you wanna come on the show and we'll both grab a bottle of something stronger than soda, watered down soda, we can talk about what is success really? I think that would be fun. The honesty, I'm told a similar how having strong opinions online affects your writing career. I don't know if that's true. I know plenty of writers who have all sorts of issues, and they're honest about the issues, and they're published. I mean, you've heard about authors who've had issues that were untreated or undiagnosed and had to have been very difficult to work with, who did just fine. I'm experimenting with drafting longhand to see if it will make it easier for me not to focus on getting it right instead of written. Kit, you should check out, I don't know if you were here, last week's interview with Mindy Carlson. She really just blew my mind with the way she approached writing her book, Her Dying Day, about the way she implemented longhand into that book. And no, it's not like longhand font. It's she wrote part of the book in longhand for a specific reason. And I found that so interesting. So please either check out the VOD or when I get the audio up, go check it out on the podcast feed. I'm not a fan because my handwriting is so bad. And my brain moves so much faster than my hand that I will literally forget what I plan on writing because my hand can't keep up. But I do think the concept of writing longhand, accessing different parts of your brain for different parts of the story, is a fascinating attempt. No. Experiment, maybe? I don't know. But I'm interested to see how that works out for you. Preemie says I will come on the show and we will drink a little drop of adult leverage and talk success. Beverage. What's adult leverage? I don't know. I was being facetious. It's the haters who are mistaken. I just, you know, I'm sorry, Andrew Pope. I'm just, sometimes when all I've got is text, I can't keep up with the tone. But I'm glad. I mean, your honesty, I think, any honesty people have about mental illness is a light in the darkness for someone. That's another, I'll be honest, that's another reason why I've kept doing this, because every once in a while I will get a note from somebody saying that my honesty about my mental illness has helped them get help. And that is far, that means more to me than someone telling me that they've been published. Because I know that having, when you address the problems in your mental health, your creative career will only get better. Unfortunately, some of the strongest and earliest drugs to help mental illness, I am not a doctor, but from what I understand, the earliest and strongest drugs to help mental illness did tend to dampen creativity or desire for either sex or other forms of recreation in life. I know somebody in the 90s, I guess mid-90s, who was suffering horrific severe depression, and when she got on Prozac, and when she felt better, she had lost a lot of what made her vivacious and kind of wild and fun-loving. And I said, you know, do you miss that? And she's like, hell no. No. I feel great. She had, what she had traded was actual functionality and not feeling like she couldn't get out of bed. The demonization of mental illness, drugs, is awful. Because there's so much that can help people. I am not a doctor. I just try to talk about myself and how either reading or drugs or various things have helped me. I found I struggle to brainstorm stuff while typing. I need to long form that part. Same, Meerkat. I have to be doing, whenever I'm doing notes or ideas, I use longhand. I have regretted it because there are sometimes I have not been able to understand what I meant or understand the words I wrote. But I always do brainstorming, list making, I always do that longhand. I have spent far too much money on the latest hot productivity app or mind mapping app or something, knowing that I'm not going to use it because I don't like typing that stuff. I got to long form that. But it's never like full sentences, dialogue, plot, all that stuff. It's just ideas. Dana says, adult leverage is the ability to disable the Wi-Fi for kids don't do their chores. I can't talk about adult leverage in a family-friendly podcast. Okay, Underpope, I'm sorry. Patrick E. McLean says he likes to draft in longhand. I have not seen him in... The last time I saw him was P.G. Holyfield's funeral, so... Not the best way to connect with somebody. And we didn't keep connecting. I was listening to you about writing in part that helped me try ADHD meds again. I think it's working, but I'm still trying and not giving up. That's great, Shards. ADHD meds also something that I believe some abuse has demonized the whole industry. And, like, the idea of... I was talking about this with Ursula, how the idea of increasing a dosage is always sounds like a failure, a giving in, or a going down a dark road from which you can never return. And I was talking to people who were on the same drugs as I am, and they were talking about how much it helped them. And I'm just like, I might as well quit. The drug is expensive, and I'm not getting this benefit. I figured out why. The dosage was too low. Once I got on the right dosage, yeah, I can feel it. I can benefit from it. But no, it's like, oh, I had to up the dosage of my ADHD meds. Now everyone's just going to be like, oh. Going to like slide me, really showing my age now. My first thought was slide me the DVD, like anybody watches DVDs anymore. Slide me the DVD of that anti-ADHD meds epidemic movie documentary that they made. It's true that when we went on anti-anxiety meds, I had less motivation, but I realized I'd just been substituting motivation with anxiety. Yeah, you may have to figure out a workaround kind of thing. I am not a doctor. Again, I can only say what I've experienced. But I think interacting with the podcast community and the live stream community is what has helped me, kept me going when I've thought maybe I had enough to say. We are getting close to the end. If anybody has any questions, I haven't done a lot of questions lately. Then again, you guys haven't sent a lot of questions, which is fine, but I realize I used to have a big feedback portion of the show. What's the best place to get my books in audio format? I think they're carried everywhere, but Audible is where I know they're carried. But I'm pretty sure that they're available in most formats. I'm trying to actually write out a schedule for my after work time so I can get a more realistic idea of how much time I have versus stuff I gotta do. Good luck, Kit. I am notoriously terrible at estimating how much time I have to do things or how much time things take. But we are getting towards the end. I've been going for quite some time. If anybody is a Hugo voter, member of Worldcon, please remember that your voting time ends on the 11th. So myself and the kids are asleep and Preemie, I believe we're all nominated for Well, we're all nominated on the Escape Pod masthead. I think Preemie's also nominated in a fiction category. So please, if you are a voter, please remember to vote no matter what. But also, you know, consider Escape Pod, myself and Divya as best editor, Preemie for the... I can't remember what you're up for, Preemie. No, just Escape Pod. That's a crime. Preemie, also amazing author. You need to check out novels, novellas, just Preemie does amazing stuff. And Kids Are Asleep book came out last week, a week ago. Where is it? Right, there it is. Right, Valerie's book, Fault Tolerance. I'm still up for the Aurora's World Fantasy and British Fantasy Awards. Okay, so you're not, like, feeling completely ignored. That's good. Preemie, you're amazing. We love you. And thank you guys for helping me along these 17 years. I would not have kept doing this if I didn't have such an awesome audience. So, you guys have really kept me going. So, I very much appreciate that. And, to learn more about me, you can go to merverse.com, mightymartgmail.com. I stream here Tuesdays and Thursdays. I should be writing, 3 p.m. Eastern, and I stream gaming Wednesdays at 3 p.m. And Ditch Diggers, my business-focused writing podcast, is Mondays. But Ditch Diggers is not family-friendly, by the way. We say bad words. And yeah, my book, Station Eternity, comes out in... 2 months. God. October 4th. So, vote for the Hugos. And that's it. Thank you. Enjoy the D&D show. Oh, that's right. Brenda Wood Bay. I do Brenda Wood Bay on Thursday nights at 8 now. I run a game about old ladies solving murders. And sometimes there are Cthulhu things. So, check that out if you're free on Thursday nights. Take care. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. Doctor Who.
This week at Macy's, get an extra 20% off with your coupon or Macy's card. That's on top of already great deals, like 25 to 60% off cold weather gear for the whole family, 30 to 60% off select bedding and bath, plus 30% off select small appliances. And Star Rewards members earn on every purchase, except gift cards, services, and fees at Macy's, Macy's Backstage, and Market by Macy's. More at Macy's.com/StarRewards. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.